Welcome to the Good Music Show. Danny here with Julius.
Yo.
We're just here to drop in and just explain what's about to go down. So this is, as you saw in the episode title, this is part one of a two-part episode. So basically, when we got together to record our first episode, we realized that 20 songs, 10 between the two of us, is a lot of songs to talk about when you have to mention every single one. So, because it's a playlist episode, we decided to just split it in half. The first part of the episode, we're going to talk about the first five songs on each of our playlists. And then the second part of the episode, we're going to talk about the second half of the playlist, the last five songs on each. So, check the episode description. There's a list of the songs we're talking about on this episode, as well as links to the full playlist. Basically, we wanted to, you know, keep it in a reasonable time length. Because, like I said, we did talk for a long time.
Yeah. We'd be blabbing, but you know, You'd be listening, so it works out.
That's right. Enjoy part one.
Might as well get a start on the prompt of today's episode, track ones.
Yeah.
So I'll give it a start. I'll just read out what I have and we'll go song by song after that. So on my playlist, I have an intro. I start off with the intro for 400 Degrees by Juvenile. Then we go into Sunday Morning by The Velvet Underground, the intro on their self-titled album with Nico. And then I go into Late Night by 454 on his album For Real. Then Hot Stuff by Donna Summer on Bad Girls. Down on the Street by Stooges on Funhouse. Sign of the Times by Prince. Supermodel by SZA. Lost Ones by the Miss Lauryn Hill. Thought It Was a Drought by Future. And then we finish things off with A Lot's Gonna Change by Wise Blood. Would you like to read off yours, Danny?
Yeah. So I started off with Location Remote by Currency, Freddie Gibbs, and Alchemist off their collaboration album Fetty. Then I have Bye Bye Love by Ray Charles off of Modern Sounds and Country and Western Music. And then I have Sweet Revenge by John Prine, the title track of that album. Rhyming and Stealing by the Beastie Boys off of License to Ill. Stardust by Willie Nelson, another title track. Cover Me Up by Jason Isbell off of Southeastern. Old Man Trouble by Otis Redding off of Otis Blue. No Regular Dog by Kelsey Walden, another title track. Wordless Chorus by My Morning Jacket off of their album Z. And closing it out, I have Let the Mermaids Flirt with Me by Logan Ledger, his first album called Logan Ledger.
Oh, yeah. And I'm biased. I think we both did a hell of a job. They all have great songs. I think each song is great. I won't be ripping into any of them. And not to, like, make Danny get scared off and be like, oh, shit, I can't talk shit about any music on here. Like, do what you got to do.
No, of course,
I just wanted to say I was really happy with how both these things turn out, especially Danny's.
Yeah.
Where I'll start off with mine, and we'll start off talking about Intro by Juvenile.
Well, real quick. Do you want to just talk about, like, the general, like, how you built it as far as, like...
Yeah.
You know, because we both put them in a specific order. It's meant to be listened to, not on shuffle. So why don't you go first and talk about, like, what you're thinking about when you built yours?
When it came to building my playlist for track ones, I was definitely like, for me, whenever I make any personalized playlist, I love nothing more than like telling a story with it. Because like with today's day and age, like, not to make myself sound too old, but like, you know, even I have like a main playlist I just shuffle of like songs I like. I love nothing more than, like, you know, the classic idea of a playlist, not just being a mix of songs that you love, but like figuring out how to make them, like, you know, go and like make a cohesive narrative out of them, you know, have them like blend into each other, which I had to like learn just because I had a very chaotic music taste, especially when I was younger. Like, I was one second go from Animal Collective to 21 Savage to fucking Neutral Milk Hotel to fucking Big Bang. It was very stupid where I had to like definitely like, you know, find a value of like making a playlist like have a front, middle, and end, have a proper structure where there's definitely a playlist that you can shuffle if you want, but I made it to listen to front to back, where the classic, like, I thought there was nothing better to, like, you know, begin with, like, an intro that I feel like does a great job of, like, not necessarily being a song, but being a fun way to bring us into the whole idea of it. And we kind of, like, you know, start real soft, start real, like, solemn, like, you know, filling out the vibe of, like, the day. Then we go into, like, you know, the real nitty gritty, the party, the hangout after the party, the mental stuff, like, oh, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? Because I love nothing more than an album that throws you right into the middle of someone's, like, thought process where you can, like, get to know them from there. And then, like, you know, it finishes out with, like, two songs that I think have fun parallels of just, like, what is next for us? What's coming for us all next in our lives?
Yeah.
Which is funny because, like, one of us thought it was a drought, but, like, that's going back to, like, you know, my shit is chaotic. I just love, like, you know, hearing these artists back to back and, like, getting things that definitely wasn't the attention at all. But, you know, I'm sure Wise Blood is a fan of rap to some extent. And I'm sure Future probably never heard of Wise Blood, but probably likes Kate Bush and, you know, other shit like that, you know? But that's what I was going for with figuring out my playlist of track ones. What about you, Danny?
Yeah, your playlist, I will say, thought it was a drought. I had that on my list because, like, I kind of just added songs and then I tried to cut it down into 10 because there's so, you know, obviously it's really hard to cut it down to 10. But
oh, yeah, like I had to break it down from almost 60.
Oh, wow, 60. I don't think I got that far. I was because I would just be creating too much work for myself. But yeah,
I just throw stuff and then I just like, like, just figure it out from there.
Yeah,
you know?
That's awesome. Yeah. So, yeah, I kind of noticed yours. What I like to do when I, especially when I listen to albums, is, you know, like, one of my nerdy music things, I want to experience it like how it came out. Like, so if it was a vinyl, like, I try to pause, like, if I have to pause or something, I try to wait till the full side is done so I can get that experience of listening to the full side as one thing. So in looking at both of our playlists, I kind of saw yours as like the first five songs, side one or whatever, is kind of like the happy, hopeful side. And then the second side is like destruction, heartbreak, revenge, that type of stuff. So I thought that was, I definitely noticed that when I was listening to it. So
thank you. I'm glad it came off that way. I hope if you check it out, we can get more into it later, but feel free to let me know if you checked it out, what you think for you so far.
So, So I'll go into mine then, like, just kind of general thinking about it. Mostly wanted to show off the different styles that I'm really interested in currently, and as well as do some older artists, as well as like ones that I am really into that are, you know, just starting out relatively, of course. Let's see, I kind of just more organized it, just kind of like how each song flows into the next.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can get into the track by tracks and I'll go into it then. So you want to start off with your track one then?
Yeah. And like in with Danny's, like I said earlier, I really loved checking it out because it had like a really fun case of sequencing with each song and stuff, which we'll get into in a sec. But yeah, so track one on my track one playlist is Intro by Juvenile on 400 Degrees. It's very much more of it's a halfway between a skit and an instrumental, where we have Manny Fresh of Big Timers, and he was basically the in-house producer for like all of the early Cash Money record albums until, like, I believe the second Carter by Lil Wayne. I said the second Carter, Carter 2 by Lil Wayne. Don't want him to yell at me. but yeah, where it's a really fun beat, is real boastful. It gets you hyped up and he just has like Manny talking his shit, talking that NOLA slang. It's real great. How'd you feel about it, Danny? What was your thoughts?
Well, I mean, just seconds in, this song screams Julius. Just that initial, you know, like as soon as I hit play, I was like, oh, of course, this is like too perfect. I never heard it before. I'm not very familiar with Juvenile, but you know that woo is just, you know, it's all you need to be perfectly prepared for what you're about to hear. You know, it just sets it up perfectly.
Oh yeah, no, it starts the day off right.
Yeah. You know? So Manny Fresh, is he the producer of the whole album or kind of like touched it all or did everything?
He is like, there's a lot of rap producers to me who are insane with how much beats they make and how much beats get released, where he produced every, to my knowledge, where like, feel free to like holler at me if I got any of it wrong, but he produced practically every beat on every Cash Money record album, from like BG's first thing, all the Hot Boys albums, all of the Turk albums. I think Turk only had one album because he went to jail. But Juvenile, Lil Wayne's early stuff. he was the guy who made beats for all those joints, where you would listen to each album thinking like, at some point it's gonna become like, you know, fucking bland. But it never does. Because something that's cool about Manny Fresh, which I was talking a lot about sampling earlier, is that Manny Fresh was one of, like, you know, first producers who really blew up who didn't use samples much at all. Like, especially in the late 90s, because in the late 90s, sampling resembles a lot of what sampling is now for pop rap, where it's very, like, you know, distinct. We already know what the hell the sample is, where it's a lot of, like, you know, hit songs being sampled. But with Manny Fresh, a lot of it, like, I don't know exactly what machine he used, but a lot of it was just, like, you know, very much stuff he used as a DJ to make beats off of, pretty much. But yeah, to answer your question, he produced this. He produced every song on this album, where, to give you a little context on Juvenile, you would know him for Back That Ass Up, classic joint, Slow Motion, classic, Rodeo. And Manny Fresh also, well, yeah, he produced Back That Ass Up because it's on this album. And I believe they both came up together. Like, Juvenile had a huge rep in New Orleans for, like, just coming out to the club and just being able to rap for hours, like, off his dome on whatever beat a DJ threw at him, which this album feels like. It's just him and Manny Fresh just fucking, like, just the meaning of the greatest minds right now,
right,
type shit. But yeah, no, where I love the intro, because Juvenile doesn't show up at all on it, yeah, but Manny, like, sets the stage for him, yeah, basically. And it sets the stage for this playlist.
Right, yeah. And I mean, that song, I could probably listen to 10 minutes of him just keeping going, and, you know, like, you know, part where he's singing, beautiful. And then he goes, oh, you're loving the album. And the album hasn't started yet.
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, really good.
So fun.
How you loving the album? We about to get to this album, you dig? The brand new Juvenile, and it's called 400 Degrees.
How old were you when you start, when this came across your desk?
This came out in 1999. So,
well, like, when you heard it, how old were you when you heard it? And, like,
heard the full album? Like when, because I started revisiting a lot of their stuff when I was in high school, because Lil Wayne was practically my favorite rapper when he was, like, just the best rapper around, like, from basically 2005 to, I would say, 2009, because that was around the time when, like, the new age rappers started coming in, of their, like, Kendrick, Drake, J. Cole, and, like, their contemporaries, where around that time, I got into a lot of, like, Cash Money record stuff, like, the earlier stuff. And 400 Degrees is just, like, to me, it's one of the most quintessential rap albums. Like, you cannot, like, if you had to, like, bring out an album to show, like, what this medium is capable of, you can show them this album, because front to back is just Juvenile rapping his ass off. Like, they're going to take his oxygen away if he doesn't fucking, like, kill each beat on this record. And, but yeah, where I was definitely, like, maybe 13, 14 when I heard the album, but, like, the hit singles off of it, like, Ha or, Back That Ass Up, I was very young, because, like, my siblings, they would, you know, watch BET, MTV. We had BET, MTV on at the house all the time. And when Back That Ass Up was out, that was, like, the biggest song in the whole country,
yeah,
where I felt like I've known Juvenile as long as I've known myself,
wow,
yeah, basically.
That's cool, yeah.
But yeah, let's go over to Danny's first song on his track one playlist.
Yeah, my first song was Location Remote, My Currency, Freddie Gibbs and The Alchemist off their collaboration album Fetty. This is one of those, I mean, you know, all sorts of genres like to do, like, intro tracks and stuff like that, but I think, like, a good, like, hip-hop intro track is really special for me, like, because, like, the way this one builds up, you know, like, that opening kind of, like, sample, and then the drums come in, it was just really addicting to listen to. And, you know, they only do, like, one verse each, but their verses are, like, you know, just, like, sharp, succinct, to the point. Like, great, great word choice that's stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. Has this album, like, stuck out with you? Like, is it, like...
Oh, yeah. Like, for me, Fetty... Like, I'm a huge fan of Currency and Freddie Gibbs. They're, like, two of the underground goats, in my opinion. Mm. And, like, Fetty has always stood out to me because it's oddly slept on when it comes to, like, a lot of, like, rap fans, where... These two rappers are huge online,
yeah,
but, like, you hear more talk about their solo stuff than this one for some reason. Because to me, front to back, almost every beat is insane. It's before Alchemist started, like, his never-ending streak of just being the best old head producer,
yeah,
where he was able to just convince Currency and Freddie Gibbs to, like, record verses to all these dope songs. And Location Remote, like, similar to the intro on this one, it just, like, so it's like,
mm-hmm, yeah,
like, it just... It sounds like after you hotbox a car, and you just see all the smoke come out when you open the door. It's like the for the guys inside, they're probably losing their fucking mind. But for you on the outside, Sig, you're like, this is the coolest shit ever. Before you see, it's just two high motherfuckers who destroyed the inside of their car, you know?
Yeah.
And like, it's that moment encapsulated for like a full 3-minute run of just Currency and Gibbs showing that if they really wanted to, they could be like one of the best rap duos. Like, they have like such a great contrast in their styles.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, really. Where,
where I thought this was a great one to start it off with, just because it's like, because I think it's like one of the few rap songs on there, and it's like showcases how you can like really set the mood for something if you know how to like start an intro, right?
Yeah.
Which it does perfectly with that like opening note that I imitated.
It definitely, I mean, I guess at the time it came out, I don't know how familiar, probably barely familiar with the whole, like what Alchemist's style is, you know, using heavily based on samples from like, and even including like movie clips and stuff like that where people are talking. I didn't know much about that, but that was definitely like, this song and that the whole project was like something that made me really, really interested in that. I think if I have the order of events right in my head, like after I heard this, like that was when I went into MF Doom and that sort of stuff, Madlib and all of them. So this project was kind of definitely a gateway to a lot of stuff that I like now.
Oh yeah.
What's crazy to me is like, I don't know if you've looked at Currency's recent output, but he puts out like 2 albums a year and they're all like really long. Like he's constantly putting stuff out. So
I'll never forget when I was in high school, there was one year he dropped like 4 tapes in 1 year.
Yeah.
And they were, one had 20 songs and they were all great.
Yeah.
Where he had like one of the best things in rap is whenever a rapper just can't stop.
Right.
And Currency is one of the ones who has one of the best runs in my opinion. Like he and that's what's impressive is that he's still doing that. He still at least drops at least 2 albums per year.
Right, right.
You know?
And Freddie Gibbs too. Like maybe he doesn't put out as much stuff, but he seems to be like constantly just rapping, you know?
Like, oh yeah. Like he slowed down a bit because like he's finally like, you know, famous at this point. Yeah. Like he's on the new Kanye album and stuff. But like with both of them, they had like really great runs where this tape for me, why it's so special to me as a longtime fan of both is that it feels like it's what they've been building up to. It's like there's no fuck shit. There's no like trying to figure out a trend or anything. And not that neither of them did that much, but they're just playing with the playbook that they like mastered. And you're going to see 2 masters at work, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Really, really, really great intro.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Just a couple of things that stood out is like I said, the word choice of what they're rapping about, like Currency in the basement scraping blades with all my sharpening irons is just something that sticks in my head. And then I think the best line, even though it might be a little dated, is when Freddie goes, making statements, they Manafort, Papadopoulos, Trump sweating bullets on Diet Cokes, dipping powder up. Like, it's like so good.
It's insane. Like where it made me happy that you had this on there because it's like one of my favorite rap songs.
Yeah,
bar none. You ready to move on to the next track?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, go ahead.
We got Sunday Morning by the Velvet Underground. Definitely, just you know, it's a classic intro to a classic album with those opening notes. I don't know what fucking, it sounds like a xylophone. I don't know what instrument that is. Like, you're going to hear that a lot on this podcast, by the way.
Yeah, maybe a glockenspiel.
Like, yeah, something like that. But yeah.
I think it's a glockenspiel.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but.
Yeah, and like, I had it right after the intro of Forged Dreams because I thought it was like, it makes for like a really funny contrast because you got this like really boom, 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 like horn heavy, like beat, Manny Fresh, like setting the stage. And it's like, you're back in bed, waking up, starting the day off and stuff. Like, where it's just a gorgeous song with Lou Reed's, like, hazy vocals and everything, where it, like, settles you down while, like, getting you going at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
What did you get from it, Dan?
Yeah, okay, so this was the one, like, I almost, like, didn't like it, I'll say. Like, the first listen, I was, like, kind of confused, and I was, like, it's just, it is, very low-key and melancholy, but... Which I didn't get that at first. And then eventually, I definitely got to the point where I like it. Just exactly what you said, just that kind of like almost like hazy and kind of like upbeat, but still like, and I did look up, like, I don't think I would have gotten this just from listening without looking it up. But the fact that it's about the morning after doing amphetamines on a Saturday night, you know, like just doing like some really hard drugs.
Lou Reed was fucked up for, I think, like, I don't want to judge a man because he did like, he died like about 10 years ago now, but either way, like he's someone who didn't hide that from his art, especially from Velvet Underground, where it's an album that, I mean, it literally has a song called Heroin, and it's sounds like you're doing fucking heroin. Yeah. And like Sunday Morning is, you know, a fair example, just like it has that hazy vibe because you feel like you're up in the air, you're on something, you know?
Yeah. And then the other thing I like, because I haven't listened to the full album of this one, but I didn't realize that, obviously I've seen the album cover. It's like the vinyl nerd, like what they hang up or whatever. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that Nico was involved. I thought it was just straight Velvet Underground. So that was interesting too.
Oh yeah. Like it was a really funny case of just Andy Warhol having way too many cooks in the kitchen. He was just like, he threw Nico at them. They did not like Nico at all. Nico didn't like them. Huh. Where it's fun to read the making of the album because you wouldn't be able to tell really. Like she fits whenever she's like the lead vocals in any of the songs, it sounds perfect. Mm-hmm. You could like literally envision a world where they moved on with Nico as their lead singer and not Lou Reed, just because he himself also wanted to have an amazing solo career. Mm-hmm. But despite she's credited on this song on Spotify, she's not on this song.
Right.
At all.
There's only like a few tracks.
Yeah. The album is credited to both of them.
Right.
But yeah, but they're great.
But yeah. I ended up liking it a lot. Like, so spoiler alert, I like every song. You mentioned it. I love every song actually off of your playlist. Mm-hmm. So, but this was the one where it like almost, it just took me a few tries to kind of get it. You know, I just like the simplicity of the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I definitely enjoyed it.
Glad to hear it came around on you.
Do you have any interesting stories about like how you got into this album?
Yeah. Like, I'm very unboxable. If you get to know me, like it's tough to figure out what the fuck is Julius coming from. But a lot of like my niche music taste came from where a lot of people get it from, which is either regular music or 4chan. And thankfully I got it from regular music, where regular music is like this really niche website that should stay niche. Some of the most insane online people are the population of that site. But thankfully, it gives you, like, if you're trying to get into stuff, it has, like, a really great chart system that has a lot of great music that you wouldn't really be able to check out anywhere else to, like, on the top of its charts, you know? Where I remember just, like, I've always heard about Velvet Underground because, like, my dad was, like, a fan of some of their records. Like, he wasn't that really big into rock, but he liked a few bands and he liked some of their stuff. And this one always stood out to me because of the cover, for one. I got to see it be posted all over the internet and everything. And it just immediately hit me, where I just love, like, that hazy, lo-fi aesthetic. And, like, they are, like, true masters of it, where they, like, get really deep into it on, like, my favorite album by them, White Light, White Heat, where there's just so much distortion on that record, you're going to think your speaker is broken when you're listening to it. And there's songs like that on this record as well, which is why Sunday Morning is a funny one, because out of context, it feels like, you know, you could put it in any commercial, you could sell apple juice to it, but it like does fit in to that like really like scary but pleasant aesthetic that they build on.
Right, right. All right, well, then we can go into my track two then. So my track two was Bye Bye Love by Ray Charles. So what was your thought to this one? Are you a big Ray Charles fan? You listen to him much?
Yeah, like I can't say I've ever like listened to any of his albums, but like the hits that I've heard, I love and think they're great. I like this one, where I had a similar response at first too, where going from Location Remote to this caught me off guard, where like it's a fun like contrast, but once like you get to the middle of it, it's like just another fun Ray Charles song, strong vocals, music that you want to get up and dance to. Where what I love about a lot of this music is that they very much like just knew you didn't need to drag a song on, like you can still fit in a breakdown, you can still fit in a part to dance to, and you can fit in the vocals in barely two minutes,
right.
Where like it was a nice quick fun to go into.
Yeah, a lot happens.
Yeah, What got you into Ray Charles? Like, are you a big rave head?
I would say, yeah, I would go as far as saying, I think Ray Charles is like on the Mount Rushmore of American music, I would say. He's definitely like not necessarily an album artist. You know, when he was coming up, you know, it was like just kind of like recording a ton of songs and just put them all out and, you know, kind of like that, that music machine type thing. But
yeah,
I mean, he obviously is like probably the biggest lover of music, you know, of all time. You know, part of being blind is, you know, your other senses are heightened. I'm pretty sure that's not a myth. I don't know for sure. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I just feel like even if that's not true or whatever, but you can see his, he cannot contain himself when he's singing. If you watch videos of him singing.
Oh yeah. If you watch like any of his live performances, this guy is so fucking excited to be doing this thing. Like it's great to see.
Yeah. I mean, I could talk, we probably have to do an episode with where we talk just about Ray Charles or something. Cause there's all sorts of videos I want to share and stuff, but this album probably, you know, cause it's a very, historic album, let's just say, for an R&B singer to make a country album. And on top of that, like this is the album he made like when he was given more artistic freedom with his you know, record label. Yeah, so a lot has been said, and especially, you know, the issue of race and country music. It's a very long, complicated history. I mean, obviously the big problem is like the lack of diversity, but it just shows you that like Ray, the only reason why he did this album is because he loved the songs and he wanted to sing, you know, all the, like the songs that, you know, tell a good story. That's what country fans love. That's all they want, you know, is a good story.
A good story and a good beat to dance.
Exactly.
To.
Yeah. And, you know, he grew up playing all sorts of music, including country. So, you know, this album itself, you know, is very influential. Like, you know, Sturgill Simpson, he kind of played off the title of the album by naming his album Meta Modern Sounds in Country Music.
Oh hell yeah! I didn't realize.
Yeah, so that's a reference to this, and you know he did two volumes of country songs plus more, plus collaborations with people like you know, Willie Nelson, Hank Williams Jr., George Jones, stuff like that. Great song, Ray Charles and George Jones, called "I Didn't See a Thing," about two buddies that are like off cheating or whatever, and they, you know, tell the "I didn't see anything," and obviously Ray Charles didn't see anything. So. Yeah, he's definitely got a good stuff. Like, I recommend just checking out, like, I think a recent compilation that came out was, like, Genius, and that has a lot of the different styles, the early stuff, the kind of newer stuff that he did, that,
yeah,
you know, the country stuff. So, yeah, but back to the song in question. It was written by, have you heard Bye Bye Love, like, by, like, the Everly Brothers or anyone else?
I feel like I've heard the lyrics before, but, like, I would have to like hear it because the name isn't coming to mind. Right. But when it first came on, I did feel like I remembered hearing like, you know, the similar melodies and stuff, where I'm sure I have.
Right.
Because like I didn't even realize that that's what the album is doing either until now, where I definitely want to check out more of his stuff that ventures into country. Because I figured like most musicians of that era that Ray Charles loved all of it, but I didn't realize that he had stuff that like directly like went into it.
Right.
Like specifically country, for example.
Right, yeah. So, like, most of the album was made up of, like, just, like, previous big hits in the country world. And this song, it was written by a husband and wife duo, Felice and Boudlow Bryant, who you may know, they wrote the song Love Hurts.
Oh!
Yeah. They're kind of, like, infamous figures in the country music world. They would invite people over to dinner, and, like, Felice would cook a big spaghetti meal, and they'd have wine and stuff, and they'd just, you know, kind of talk and stuff. And by the end, when they got all warmed up with like the good food and wine, they would like pull out the guitar and, you know, start, you know, playing songs for like to pitch to them, you know, pitch to artists and, you know, probably label people and stuff.
Exactly how it should be.
Right, right. Yeah, it's just, you know, fun. So that's part of how they got, they have a ton of songs that are pretty popular, but most famously probably writing for the Everly Brothers and songs like Wake Up Little Susie and All I Have to Do Is Dream. And this song as well, the Everly Brothers did. You know, brother duo that had really good harmonies. That's pretty much all I have for this song. Unless you had anything else.
Yeah, no, that I wish I like, because I definitely didn't do as much research as I wanted to for this one. But it's great to like hear all this stuff from you about that provides like further context on what makes the song the way it is. But yeah, I thought it was a real fun track too. But So back on mine, we got Late Night by 454. And I would love to hear, before I cut off, I would love to hear what you thought, because this is probably like the most unhinged sonically of the playlist, where I'm curious, like, what was your first impressions and like what, how your thoughts developed listening to it?
Yeah. So I was a little familiar with 454. I listened to Fast Tracks 3 off of your recommendation.
Oh, sick. I forgot I threw that at almost everyone. Yeah. I'm glad to hear you checked it out.
Yeah. So it wasn't like completely shocking, but I mean, like, obviously in the context of the playlist, it's definitely similar to going from, you know, my first song to Bye Bye Love, you know. You know, it's definitely, to someone just walking in on it, it's goofy, right? You know, it's out there. I think we both like stuff like that. You know, I imagine people walking in and being like, what the hell are you listening to at this? But yeah, you know, this one I definitely like. I get what he's going for. What I noticed too is, like, I don't know if you picked up on this or did this purposely, but it kind of parallels Sunday Morning in a way that it's like recitation, like the quality of just kind of like repeating things, and it kind of like almost like a song circle or whatever.
Yeah.
Like the same lines repeated. And this one, particular Late Night, like it starts out fast and then he's like, he makes the bold decision to be like, hold on, I'm going to do it again, slower. So you hear everything I'm saying this time.
Yeah.
So I liked it. It's really cool.
Yeah, no, it's like, it's one of my favorite like intros to come out recently, where I don't, when did this come out? 2021. This is probably like my favorite intro of the decade so far, not to like throw a claim out there like that, but it's like such, because this was the first 454 song I've heard, where this is probably like the most, I won't say the word obscure because that's like a weird connotation to it, but when you look at our playlist, like if you're into any kind of music, you'll recognize almost everyone except for probably 454, just because he's still getting a bit popular. Like he has about, what, 300,000 monthly listeners on Spotify. And I don't mean to say this to, like, you know, make it seem like, oh, he ain't shit, he ain't got no fans, because he got fans. Like I got to, like, I had two chances to see him live so far, and things came up both times. But my good friend Elena, who shout out if you're listening, she got to see him, I think, twice, where she could tell you herself, like, it's a fun time. But he's similar to Manny Fresh, who did the Beatle intro. He's a DJ who does production or got into production for DJing, and where he does samples, and the way he uses samples is so fucking fascinating to me. Because like how Danny mentioned earlier, the song has like a repetition to it that it builds on, where he kind of raps the same verse like almost four or five times throughout it, where the first half is like, you know, very sped up, chipmunky, like he has like he pitches up his voice to make it sound high pitch. And the beat is just so chaotic, where the vocals are kind of just like swimming throughout it, where some of it's coming in and out. And then the second half, it just slows it down, like chops it up. Well, not chops it up, it screws it, basically. And it makes the song have a completely different tone to it, where I had it after Sunday Morning because I feel like the first half of it kind of like signifies, because I feel like I definitely made this playlist to kind of like resemble a day in a life in a way, where the first half feels like it's going through the day, and then the second half is going into the evening, which, you know, going to the songs after that. And it's a song that I can't say too much about, just because all you can really do is listen to it and just like hear it for yourself. It's like you won't really know how to deal with it, because there's not that much rap that sounds like it and is trying to like have fun with it as much as 454 is with this intro and this album, which was the first song I heard from him, from Zach Fox on Twitter. Where if you don't know Zach Fox yet, pause his playlist, check out a song of his, check out a set of his. The guy does it all. He's on Abbott Elementary. And not only just being a talented comedian, actor, and rapper, he has an incredible music taste, where he's constantly just putting on lesser known artists on his Twitter. And he shared the link to this guy's music video, 454's music video. And it's like just as insane as the song itself. It's fucking crazy. It's like a breath of fresh air. But yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that Danny was into it, and that he also checked out the album I recommended that you brought up earlier, Fast Track 3, which I think he dropped last year, which is just a full-blown advance forward of like, can this guy make this sound even better? And he fucking does on that album, which is just front to back, just full of crazy, crazy flips and raps.
Yeah. I think I definitely need to re-listen to some of his stuff just with the context of what you're saying, because I didn't really stick in my memory very well, but I could have just been, I was thinking about other things while listening to it. But this song definitely proves that he's worth checking out more for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited to get into this one on your playlist, Sweet Revenge.
Yes. I was curious. Yeah. I'm really curious about what you think. So, Go ahead.
It's just so badass. Like, this is the kind of, like, you would say this is country, right?
Yeah, sure.
What would you call this?
I hate to call it one
put
thing
things
or other,
in a box.
But John Prine, he's known for his songwriting.
Is he like a singer-songwriter, you would say then?
Yeah, I think he pretty much defines singer-songwriter. If you're looking up that term in the dictionary, he's going to be in there. John Prine. Definitely mostly well known for his songwriting, but this song, it definitely goes into that kind of like country with like the soul and kind of funk influence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it slaps. Like, it's a fucking banger.
Yeah, he was on Atlantic at the time, I think, or he started off on Atlantic. So obviously Atlantic is like one of the biggest labels for like soul, you know, like Aretha Franklin, I believe, is on Atlantic, and Etta James. So like, it definitely it bucks what you think of country being, right? It's funky, and you know, the opening lick kind of says it all.
Mm-hmm. The backing vocals are so sick, and like just the tone of it. Like it's an intro where I immediately almost wanted to stop listening to the playlist just to hear the rest of the album. Because
it really
kicks, man. Like,
right, and I think it's essential to look at the cover of the album while you're listening to this song too.
Because the cover, like, I want a copy just because of how cool it looks.
Yeah. He's kicked back in his convertible that, you know, it was his first toy that he bought with his you know, music money. When they gave him a little something, the label gave him something. So he bought that, and he's, you know, laid back in the driver's seat with his feet on like the passenger door, and he's got shades on, he's got cowboy boots, and he's got a cigarette in his mouth. And, like, to give you kind of a little background about this album in particular, like why it's called Sweet Revenge, besides the song, is like his first album, basically a greatest hits album of some of the best songs of all time, in my opinion. Anyone who's a fan of John Prine will tell you that his first album is like, it's impeccable. So it's also kind of very stripped down. And then his second album, he wanted to kind of be like the vibe of like playing in your living room. Like, you know, growing up, he would, you know, just play songs with, you know, people, his friends and stuff. And so it's kind of got like a less tight sound to it. It's like just a little looser, I guess you could say. And, you know, like obviously having an album like his first, it was very critically acclaimed, you know, and everyone was talking about, you got to listen to this guy. He's got these incredible songs. And then to have the second one come out and people were a little bit more critical, you know, a little bit more harsh or negative or whatever you say. So it kind of got to his head a bit, and that's how he came up with this song, essentially, is, you know, just being like, all right, you didn't like that one, but I'm gonna show you what I can do now. And this album, it definitely expands, you know, his comfort zone as far as like having a band backing him. I mean, you can hear he's got some really good players on it, and it's kind of expanding like his original style is kind of just like finger style, very folky, not a lot of drums or other instruments other than guitar, bass, and, you know, like a light tapping the drums or whatever. So, obviously being a songwriter, like, what did you think of like what he was saying in this song? Like the words, did anything stand out to you?
Yeah. Like, I want to bring up the lyrics real quick, like make sure I got what I was hearing. I mean, just the fucking like first line, I got kicked off of Noah's Ark. that is like, It kind of goes back to like what I was kind of talking earlier, way earlier, about like rap and country and parallels. Is that what not rap and country, but just even just like this style of music, is that it's telling the like story of like not an asshole, but like a guy who is an outlaw, a guy who is like not trying to play shit by the book because he's going to make his own path forward. And it creates such a fun character where I just want to like, you got to sit down and listen to it. Like, because I was washing dishes the first time when I was listening to this playlist of doing chores. And I had to like literally stop what I was doing just to like listen to it. Because I was like, man, this dude is fucking spitting, you know, especially the hook. Like, oh, my God, the hook. It, I was singing along by the end of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. Yeah. Yeah.
It's real catchy.
And I like how he can do like very, you know, songs that are about specifically one thing. Like Sam Stone is a good example. It's about, you know, a Vietnam veteran coming home and, you know, and getting addicted to drugs and like the turmoil and destruction that comes from that, you know, like having kids and stuff. But like this one, you know, he can be fun and a little cynical as well without even saying much, you know, like talking about how he called up his local DJ and he didn't have a lot to say, but the radio, you know, learned how to play all my favorite tunes, you know, like it's kind of like, you know, kind of like the ignorant view of someone that's like, oh, hey, the radio, you know, it's good.
Yeah.
So, again, like if you listen to it just kind of passively, it doesn't really sound like he's saying much, but if you zone in, there's like all these little vignettes of just kind of commentary, and it's very John Prineian. He talks about the white meat is on the run and the dark meat is far too done. He loved food and fried chicken and hot dogs and stuff like that. So like meatloaf was one of his favorite foods. So just he's got that like fun kind of vibe. Like nothing really matters, you know, just sit back and enjoy while also having these songs that will like break your heart and, you know, tear your insides up. So
I'm excited to even check out that like kind of range of stuff that he has, because it's just fucking like it really blew my fucking wig off.
Yeah, he got into some like kind of like rockabilly stuff. Like he even worked with Phil Spector, the insane producer, the wall of sound guy.
I just always see his fucking rat's nest of a haircut during his trial. That's what I see every time someone brings his name. It's just it sucks because the guy is like, you listen to anything he produced and you're like, yeah, he was a genius. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like to everything else he did, you know?
Right.
Yeah, no, but the songwriting is sick, where he's able to create such great visuals and not that many words, where I think like it just shows like a strong songwriter to be able to pull that off. But that one, it really got the momentum going, which to pivot back over to mine, we got Hot Stuff by Donna Summer.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
How'd you know that this is exactly the song I wanted to hear?
Yeah, no, it's fucking sick. It's literally, it's like, I mean, this album alone is just, it's like, to me, one of the best party albums. It's long as shit, but almost every song you can dance to, you can groove to. It's the perfect disco album, you know? And Donna Summer, hell of a singer, hell of an artist. And that song, just, you know, the sound effects, the beep, beep, like all that. Great.
I was just going to say, the song is like, it's everything I like. It's, you got the rock elements, you got the blues elements, you got pop, disco. It's also like, it came out just before the 80s. So it's kind of it has that sound, but it's not too heavy handed.
And it's like, not to get too off topic, but like, it's just like, cause for me, like, it's bad to put stuff in a box, but like Donna Summer is typically categorized under disco as rather than soul or like rock even, despite it has like many of those elements in it.
Yeah.
It's like crazy to grow up hearing like, oh, disco sucks. Yeah, disco is shit. And like, there was a whole riot in Chicago over disco. You know, where when you check out Bad Girls, you're like, what the fuck is wrong with these people? This slaps harder than anything in that era.
Yeah.
You know, where Donna, like, just hell of a song, hell of an intro.
Yeah. And to kind of go off that, what I, you know, I think is fine is like describing style. Like, there's no problem with that. You know, like that's fine. But like when you get into the weeds of arguing like what something is versus what it isn't, that's a huge thing with country music, particularly. For the people say that's not real country, that's not country. It's like, who cares what, you know? Talk about what it is, not what it's where it's going to be found in the record store, you know. But yeah, obviously, like style and stuff like that, and the influence tracking that, like, you know, of course we'll do that. But I think we're both on the same page of being like, why limit things? Why put it in a box when that's not necessary? You know. So anyway, I'm off my soapbox on that, even though I'll probably talk about it five more times this episode and then on every other episode we do. But what I was going to say is, like, I had some notes written about this song, but like I listened to it again. I listened to a live album that just randomly kind of picked it. I was like, oh, well, I wonder what she sounds live. And she changed my opinion on Elvis. Like, I would say I'm one of those people who like just writes off Elvis. Obviously, he's a figure, important figure in history. And there's a lot of debate on the merit of Elvis. I think he's done a lot of cool things. Like, of course, you know, like this guy loves music and he was given an unlimited budget to do whatever he wanted. So
my thing, which I'll probably have to talk about a lot on here, is that with our generation, since we have so much fucking art, so much fucking music to, like, you know, check out.
Yeah.
It's very easy to dismiss an artist when you don't have the context and you don't have the experience of, like, seeing them when they were, like, one of the greats, where Elvis is a complicated figure, like most important pop figures, where it's very easy to, like, you know, oh, he did this shit, he did that shit, all right, fuck it, I won't be bothered checking it out.
Yeah.
But you can't be, you know, offended or pissed when someone who actually, you know, grew up listening to it or wanted to check it out says, like, yo, this shit's good, you know, like, you can't feel a type of way.
Yeah.
You know, and not to, like, police how people can't feel or whatever, but it's just more my piece of advice is, like, you know, settle down and just, like, you know, you made your decisions, motherfucker made their decision.
Right,
like,
right.
For me, with Elvis, even, I have still never done too much work to check out, you know, dive deeply into his discography. But even I can, like, say, like, yeah, the motherfucker was clearly who he was because of who he was. Yeah, like, just check out any of his hits, you know?
And that being said, I think, screw Elvis. You know, Donna Summer can do anything Elvis did and did it better.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but
exactly. Because at the end of the day, like, you, the person who is saying, yo, check out the other people who are doing it, that's just way better. Yeah, that is the truth of the situation.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, you got to do the work, in my opinion, to, like, earn the right to say that. Where a lot of people, they don't even want to check out Donna Summer. They just want to, like, say, fuck Elvis and call it a day.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So, like, you know, before I heard this song, I've probably heard Donna Summer in just, like, the public or whatever, but I didn't, you know, obviously clock it as being, oh, I'm listening to Donna Summer. But, you know, before I was pro Elvis, I think he's did a lot of things well. But to say that without having heard Donna Summer, it changes the game. I mean, you know, she was doing, like, almost like musical level, like, performances live, you know, just from the very little I checked out.
The kind of stuff that we expect from, like, pop stars like Beyonce and Taylor Swift, Donna Summer was already, like, a master of it.
Right.
You know, like watch any of her live performances. Like, I wish to Christ she had, like, a great concert film that was easily available, because it's something else to see it live.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And this song is no exception.
Right.
You know?
So, like, yeah, this song just makes me, I want to play it in public, and I'm going to DJ a party actually this weekend, and I'm going to put on there. I'm going to put that on there for sure.
Hell yeah. It gets the house going.
How has this song, like, come into your life? Like I just want to picture places where you've listened to this song and it was awesome.
Well, what sucks is I was the one, I had to throw my own party to hear this damn song because not that many of my friends, go this far. Like, even my friends who are DJs, which, shout out to my DJ friends, I love y'all, but, like, they don't look into, like, disco or, like, 70s soul that much to, like, you know, figure out what to play. Mm-hmm. Where I just checked it out because I was already a huge fan of Giorgio Moroder, who I probably butchered his name. I'm going to butcher a lot of names, by the way, on this podcast. But that dude, Giorgio Moroder, I learned about, like, most millennials or Zoomers from Daft Punk. Like, they had a whole song where he was narrating on it on their Random Access Memories album. And that song is insane, you know? And of course, I've already heard a lot of his music, but the guy's behind a lot of the, like, sickest, like, synth bass, like, disco or pop in the 70s and 80s. And with Donna Summer, he was very much like her. He was the Manny Fresh to her Juvenile, where they, like, came together at the right time in history to make some of the best music of that era. Where for me, I was like, it was like definitely after I was in college, I was just trying to check out, like, more stuff in the 70s that wasn't, like, you know, stuff that people typically throw at you, like classic rock or classic soul, where I wanted to, like, you know, check out more of the dancey stuff. Where I was checking out Niles Rogers' band Chick, and I wanted to check out Giorgio Moroder's stuff. And I grabbed this, I actually grabbed this from a record shop for cheap. Like, it was a really fucked up copy for, like, damn near, like, only, like, $4. And fucking Christ, like, I definitely heard Bad Girls and, like, some other songs I hear, but I somehow had never heard Hot Stuff. And it blew my fucking, like, wig off, man. It was crazy. Yeah. Where I, like, the next party I threw, I played it, like, 3 times and everyone was dancing. You know, it was a great time.
Yeah.
Where, play more Donna Summer if you're confused as a DJ. It's my advice to every person.
Yeah.
Putting shit together for a party. because it gets everyone moving. And also, great karaoke song. Don't ruin the night by doing Bohemian Rhapsody. Do hot stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Bohemian Rhapsody is a good song. I'm not going to say it's a bad song. I'm tired of people doing it at karaoke.
Yeah, it's overdone. Come on. Do you really need to hear that one again?
Yeah.
I mean, show it to like a 12-year-old who's never heard it, and then they'll get really into it probably. But no, even the, I don't know if you've ever heard the remix of it by Kygo. Even that's really good.
I have not.
I mean, I'm not like one to listen to remixes of popular songs by kind of EDM stuff. Uh-huh. That's just not my thing. I'm not really I know of Kygo. Have you ever heard of Kygo?
No, I have not.
I only know him because he's remixed a few U2 songs, like their modern songs.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it's like dancing at a club or whatever. Like, that's not my main thing, but even this song cannot be ruined by even if you think remixing a song like that is ruining it, that's not the case for this one. It's still great. It's danceable. It builds up in different ways. But my main thing I got to say is just, if you haven't heard it, stop what you're doing. Don't waste another second on this earth having not heard it.
Why are you listening to this episode? You haven't listened to the fucking playlist yet. Okay.
Yeah. First of all, we told
you. Unless you looked at the playlist and you're like, I already heard this stuff. I already know what you're going to talk about. Yeah. Listen to it. Listen to it again now. Pause right now. Listen to it again.
Why not?
Yeah.
I mean,
fuck us.
I mean, not that we're not doing something. We're doing something completely groundbreaking here, talking about music on a podcast, but
yeah,
you know, it's still not as good at, you know, it's close. It's close to as good as Donna Summer, but you know, it's still, it's only our first episode after all. So.
Yeah, exactly. Give us a break.
Yeah.
Give yourself a break. But yeah, but to pivot back over to Danny, if you don't have Spotify or Apple Music, you can steal this song from various websites. But if you're still in it, you better be rhyming, because we got Rhyming and Stealing by Beastie Boys.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I think we're both really into this album and the Beastie Boys in general.
Like,
so
you were talking about how you wanted, thought it was a drought almost on your playlist. Rhyming and Stealing was the one for me when I first looked at it, besides Location Remote, where I was like that was one of the 60 I had to remove, where I was like, I don't know how to fit this in here, which is why I was so the only thing that made me not stop listening to Blaze and listen to the Sweet Revenge album was Sweet Revenge going to Rhyming and Stealing is such a fucking baller transition.
Yeah.
Like, they match up perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot to say about this song, but it's just awesome.
So I love the Beastie Boys. Like, I just finished reading their big book they released a while ago after MCA passed, which I got to learn a lot of cool stuff about them. I got to learn how Rick Rubin is a piece of shit. And what's cool about this song is that it was made by MCA in his bedroom and stuff. It was right after they had to make a bunch of singles for Def Jam that didn't really fit their vibe. Like, if you listen to anything Beastie Boys made between them being a punk band and before this album, it's some of the worst rap music that you can't imagine how they fucked it up this bad before it was even really a conceivable genre yet. Where
do they? I assume they admit that themselves, that it was their early.
No, they one of them outright says, "Don't look it up. don't look up this song," because one of them, it's like a really obvious rock song, but I forget. It's an AC/DC song. It's what's that one?
Back in Black.
Yeah, one of them samples that is terrible. It's fucking awful. Oof. But where Rhyming and Stealing is like such a great intro, not only to this album, but it's a great intro to what makes the Beastie Boys such a fun, unique band, where they're one of the few who are able to take so many elements, pull from so many places, and make such a fun and crazy track. Where I love nothing more than just how dumb so many lines in here. Like, a line that's stuck in my head right now is when my girl shakes her head, she gets real funky. what does that even mean? But it's fucking awesome, you know?
Yeah, and that's something that kind of stood out. Like, I actually misheard a line. Like, there's a part where he says no parrot on his shoulder, pirate with no parrot on his shoulder, to say he's not like that. But I originally heard it as he was describing himself as being a pirate with a parrot on his shoulder, which made me think of how cartoonish the references and stuff are.
Yeah.
Even though that one doesn't really fit, but it's they're talking about Pirates of the Caribbean stuff, yo ho ho and a bottle of rum, maidens and wenches. And then they reference Colonel Sanders and Betty Crocker. It's funny too, because like this, I mean, I feel like there was some like backlash against like the, if you know about the original album title, you know that they were kind of, they were lampooning this culture. And they've since regret it, but like
in the book they go into it, they damn near want to like write off this album just because of how much it fucked up the start of their career, because they were huge. It was like the biggest album in America for a while when it came out, where the news and media immediately made them the like, oh my God, this is going to make our kids go dumb dumb. Like they were the face of that before NWA even. Where it's kind of funny to listen to this album and think that this is what scared suburban people, because the lyrics, like we were talking about, they're so fucking silly.
They couldn't fathom someone shooting Betty Crocker. Now, why would he shoot Betty Crocker?
Like, it's so goofy, you know, where like you can tell how much fun they're having with it and how much they could never have estimated that it was going to like become this long shadow for their career. Yeah. Of people seeing them as like this fratty boy band, when like, more than anything, just, you don't need to read a book. You don't need to learn about them. If you just check out their music, you can tell what I'm talking about earlier, which is that these guys were not just musicians who loved making it, but they loved checking out so many different styles of music and so many other styles of media.
Yeah.
Like even just that quick sample of like Running from the Law, like that comes in like near the end.
Yeah,
like,
I fought the law and the law won. Yeah. Or no, they change it to say I fought the law and I cold won.
Yeah. Like, it's just so imaginative, so fucking cool. I love this song, and I love that it really works well on this playlist, you know?
Yeah. All right, you want to switch over to you?
Yeah. We got Down on the Street by the Stooges, which we talked about one of the episodes we did on the original version on SoundCloud. I gave Dan... Were you the guest for Funhouse?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I gave Danny Funhouse. One of the few things I remember from that series is, like, you just making a quick point of, like, yeah, you just hear the first second, you're like, oh, yeah, this is great. This is the best thing ever. And, like, it is that quick of just making you realize this is going to be such a sick song, where the Stooges is definitely a band I got into late. I got into them in college. Like, I was already, like, pretty old at that point of like, you know, getting into music, where I got into them just because I got tired of seeing Iggy Pop shirtless, like him as an old man, where I was just like, why the fuck can he do this? Why are we letting this guy do this? And I checked out Funhouse, like, cause like my buddy was like, that's the best one. Like all the albums are great, but that's the best one. And I'm glad I started with that one, cause I love the other two as well. But like Down on the Street, it just fully makes sense. Where if you make Down on the Street, you could be a fucking like just, you could be whatever. You could be shirtless on stage, regardless of how old you are. Not to body shame on this like open-minded podcast, but I'm sorry. Just pause and Google Iggy Pop right now.
I mean, it is funny, but
he can do it though, because he made down. He had a part in making Down on the Street, which is just one of the most killer intros. It just sounds cool. It sounds like you just left the fucking club. You're hunting down for a cigarette. You don't know the fuck is gonna come for you, and the cover. Like, just it pops it off the screen, you know?
Right, yeah.
What about you, Danny? Did you have a Stooges background or anything? How'd you get into them? Or did you check them out before I told you about
them? No, that episode we did was how and I haven't really listened to much outside of, so my whole knowledge is just Funhouse.
Yeah.
Which I don't think I should keep that way, but it's kind of nice being like, this band has this like insanely good album or whatever. I'm sure I'll check them out eventually, but... To me, yeah, this song is like, in the whole album, it's just peak rock to me. Like, just four instruments and one guy dedicated fully to singing.
Yeah.
It's like doing so much with so little, you know, but in the lyrics as well, like, he's not really saying much, but the whole, you know, like the song is, it just really speaks for himself, and he's using the lyrics and singing as another instrument, essentially.
Oh, yeah, where his voice, it's so like... grainy, it's like fucking like strained out, where you can feel like this guy hadn't drank water in days, and it kind of feels like an instrument that's contributing to this like real aesthetic, you know? I need to learn a lot more, because I'm sure they're on drugs. I don't know what drugs, but it's like it resulted in a crazy intro where after Hot Stuff, it just feels like, you know, like I said, it's like you left the club, You're out there now. You're fucking adventuring. You're
down on the street.
Yeah.
You're going to the next thing.
Down the street.
I don't know. Have you, they put out like a complete Funhouse Sessions album recently.
I need to check. Yeah, I saw they did that. I need to check it out because what's fun on that album, I don't want to talk too much about that one, but it's a very straightforward, like, you know, hard rock 70s album until like out of nowhere, as you're going into like the end of the album, like I forget which song it is, I think it's 1970. A fucking like, I don't know what horn it is. Like it could be a saxophone or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just comes out of nowhere and a sax solo comes out and it stays there for the rest of the album. Like it, I don't know who's playing it. I need to look into it, but it takes the album that's already just a crazy rock album to a whole other level because unfortunately, since like, you know, the classic rock, like, I mean, Rock Band, the video game probably contributed to it as well, is that people forget that you can bring in instruments that are known just for jazz into this style of music to give it such a crazier edge.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it adds the kind of like the surrealist, like all of a sudden just a saxophone is playing. Like you could picture that like being in like a David Lynch movie or something, like inexplicably, but also very explicitly, because I'm sure like whatever they listen to, you know, that influenced them is probably had sax in it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be featuring it so prominently.
Yeah.
But yeah, the complete Funhouse Sessions, I haven't listened to the whole thing. Eventually, I'm going to treat myself to that. But I did go through and listen to just like the first few seconds of Down on the Street. Like they have 15 takes of it on there.
That's sick.
So like I listened to like the first 5 seconds of each one, and really, it's really cool because you can kind of see them figure it out after each one, eventually to where they have the album version that's like fully mixed and stuff on. Like, so that's, I definitely want to do that with all the other songs as well and kind of like see them kind of like get tighter and tighter.
Hell yeah. Love the Stooge. But yeah, let's bring it back over to Danny with Stardust by Willie Nelson.
Yeah. So
Willie,
I've already made this joke in a few different ways, but Willie Nelson is the reason why I wanted to start this podcast, because I need to talk about it to somebody besides my wife, who does not care.
and he found a perfect person, because I know, like, I mean, the one of the episodes we're doing is going to have a Willie Nelson album, and I admittedly have not really heard that much of him outside of like a few songs where. I'll go into more on the episode, which I'll spoil for Danny. Like, I love the album. The album.
Okay.
I have a lot of feelings about it. Like, and this song is really just like something I think, just even just checking out some of his stuff, thanks to Danny, is that he's able to just like create such a real transcendental vibe with his music. Like, it feels real delicate, real pleasant, while having like such a great omniscient storytelling on it, you know, where his stories are very like detailed and vivid, but they still feel far, like dreamy in a way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Where it's music, like, I mean, the cover is literally just the night sky, but like it truly feels like a song that envisions that completely, you know? But, oh, he got it up there. Hell yeah. That's a beautiful, beautiful record.
We're going to talk about Willie Nelson a lot on this show, because he's definitely, he's right next to Ray Charles on my Mount Rushmore. And so, yeah, stay tuned for the next episode. We'll go ahead and say it. We're talking about Willie Nelson's Redheaded Stranger in the next episode and Tupac's All Eyes on Me.
Yeah. Make for a real fun combo. But yeah, but like, what do you have like much, like what made you pick this one for your Willie Nelson on this playlist?
I couldn't make this playlist without including Willie. I think I thought this whole album would probably be the most up your alley out of all of them. I will say his singing on it it's a little different from most of his stuff. Like it's, like you said, it's very tender and gentle. And I gave you a sample of just when he's singing like that, like Redheaded Stranger and Stardust, both those albums, he's very tender. And before he's a little bit, before these, like his early period, he was a little bit more enunciating every word. And then later on, he gets into his probably most well-known, where he's got that really high pitch nasally and he's like offbeat. Kind of thing. So yeah, these albums are really special for that, because of how soft he is. And yeah, I don't know how much you looked up about like the making of this album, but I would say it's definitely one of the top three for me, and probably for most people, it's his best selling album as well. Like, so it has that quality of reaching people that don't like all of Willie's stuff, or like they only know him from Stardust. You know, maybe they're not super into country, but this album is, you know, pop standards from like the 30s, 40s, and 50s, including Stardust. And specifically about this song, like I thought it was really fascinating that the music was composed by Hoagie Carmichael. And the producer of this album, he plays piano on it, Booker T. Jones, of the famous Booker T. and the MGs, backing band for so many soul legends like Otis Redding and stuff. He went to Indiana University because of Hoagie Carmichael. That's why he picked the college he wanted to go to. And keep in mind, Booker T. Jones decided to go to college to study music after he made Green Onions. You know Green Onions?
Really? Yeah.
He made that and he was like, no, I still need to learn more about music, you know? So
that's fucking
he
awesome.
He kind of like did hell music yeah. on his free time on the weekends while he was going to college because of Hoagie Carmichael.
Uh-huh.
And this guy named Mitchell or Michael Parrish wrote the lyrics. And he wrote the lyrics after the melody was written. And basically, if you listen to the song, he's writing about how much he loves the melody. Like even like my Stardust melody. He's like, this song is a love song to the song, which is this kind of like weird meta thing.
That's what I was curious about when I was listening to it. It feels like it's a song that, it, not even in like a superficial way, but like it's in love with itself. And it makes sense when you like listen to it. It's real pretty. And it's like, it's fun to know that that's how it got made, that like the lyrics came after the melody.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And another reason why like this album and the song is so important is I was listening to an interview, one of my favorite podcasts, One by Willie, hosted by John Spong at Texas Monthly. He just did an interview with Booker T. Jones and they actually talked about Georgia On My Mind. But going to the album, like they couldn't think of another instance of a major country artist having a black producer, like even to this day, like it hadn't happened before then. And it still really hasn't happened unless there's like some example they couldn't think of, but.
That's what I think is kind of like sad with like people having a whole discourse of figuring out, not to get too off topic and dated a bit, but like the whole discourse of like Beyonce making a country album, like people are like, why is she doing this now? Or like, is it even country? It's just like, I'm cool with it just because I think it's a kind of a shame that like, I mean, there are black people all over the world, like black people all over the world, and there's black people in the South, especially like you'll know that even more in rap and stuff, where it is just like weird that like in country, there's not that many that people immediately bring to mind, you know, where country stars always end up collaborating with like someone like Nelly or fucking LL Cool J instead of a like fellow black country artist. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
We'll have to get into that on the next episode because, yeah, obviously I have a lot of thoughts on that. So and just another quick couple of interesting facts about the album. It was recorded in a house. Emmylou Harris and her then husband, Brian Ahern, had this mobile recording studio called the Enactron Truck. So they had the truck parked outside and everyone was in their own little room in the house. And most notably, Mickey Raphael, the harmonica player, was playing in the bathroom, like up against the shower tiles, because the reflective sound that they made was just like too good. So when you're hearing that, you're hearing like a guy playing in a bathroom. So I think that's really cool. Also recorded on the Enactron truck was the band's The Last Waltz.
Hell yeah.
Have you seen that movie, Martin Scorsese?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I haven't seen it yet, but
it's great. It's not my favorite concert film because they shoot it pretty conventionally, which I'm an asshole for saying that just because how else do you shoot a fucking concert film? You try it, asshole. I do want to one day. If you're a musician, wants a concert film, please let me prove my point. but it's a good one, and they're sick in it.
Yeah,
but yeah,
yeah, and just like one more thing about it is that just how strong of a choice it was to put out a collection of these old pop standards that Willie loved and Booker T. They got together, they randomly met and started playing songs together, and they realized how much they had the same music taste.
I was curious at Google real quick. I saw that he was just his neighbor in Malibu, which is like such a funny like sentence.
Yeah, he just saw him running on the beach and said, hey, is that Willie Nelson? And that's how they got introduced. Like,
yeah, man,
crazy how the stars align.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, also, right. Just like this was put out at the height of his whole outlaw, you know, in quotes, popularity. Like the whole outlaw thing was basically the labels like wanting to market it as something and put like a wanted poster on the picture. But like they wanted him to like just keep doing that. You know, it's gonna be a big hit. But he's like, no, I want to put out these old songs, and he did it beautifully. The whole album is like. it's timeless. It's just one I can just put on whenever. And especially this song, like it's got like the kind of like, you know, part A, part B, part C structure. And yeah, it's just fantastic. And, you know, what's really great too is like the Willie's guitar playing is kind of what leads the whole thing. Like everyone was following his guitar playing. So,
So just to confirm, like he does vocals and guitar on this then.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll get into Willie. I think he's, people, you know, love him for a lot of reasons, but his guitar playing is one of my favorite things about him. And I'm constantly listening to his songs and trying to recreate his playing. Yeah, because it's so unique.
When it comes to country stars who aren't like, you know, cartoon characters like Kid Rock, I can't believe I brought him up twice now. But Willie Nelson has always been like the one who like I've always heard of. Like he showed up on like a lot of like just, you know, scary movie type films or like VH1 or
King of the Hill.
And like where I've always known of him culturally because he's always been someone who's able to like, you know, make that pivot where I'm excited to like check out more of his stuff.
Yeah, especially. That's my whole vendetta is like I want to make sure that everyone knows that Willie, how valuable he is as his contributions to music. And he's not just the guy who smokes weed and, you know, gets high or whatever. Like there's so much to him. And so definitely if you're a Willie fan, you'll like this show because I'll be talking about him a lot. So, but.
Oh yeah. If you like Willie, check out the Good Music Show.
Before we go here, I just want to plug our social media. Feel free to give us a follow over at Instagram at the GMS Pod. Also on TikTok at the GMS Pod and Twitter at the GMS Pod. And send us an email, thegmspod@gmail.com. If you'd like to give us any suggestions, let us know your feedback on the show. If you have any thing you want to share, feel free to send us an email. We'll leave that open and look forward to hearing from you.
And on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on, be sure to leave us 5 stars if you really like what we're saying. And even if you just like us, you know, and you didn't like the episode, just do it because it helps us and it will help you by being able to say, hey, I listened to a 5-star podcast. I did this. This is my doing.
Yeah, not many people can say they listen to a 5-star podcast. So
not many. Like, you know, some of the podcasts are 4.8, 4.9, but this is the first 5-star one because of you.
Yeah. Thank you for that.